Good morning to you all. I want to recognize the presence of my advisor, Dr. Minu, Dr. Led, and a lot of my department colleagues are here. Thank you for your presence. So this morning I want to talk to you about the effect of phosphate rock enriched rice husk biochar on lowland rice cultivation in northern Ghana. Ghana is located in West Africa. This is how the map looks like. It's a small country about the size of Wyoming, but has very distinct agroecologies. We have a forest belt in the southwest, a coastal savanna in the southeast, and a savanna covering about half of the country in the northern part, where most of the rice in Ghana is grown. Just to give you a brief background, this is how rice demand has grown and rice production has grown in Ghana over since 1965, almost 50 years now. You could see on the chart that demand is somewhere around 1,800 metric tons, 1.8 million metric tons, whereas production is just around 400 metric tons. So we have a deficit about 1.4 million metric tons, which we spend hard and currency to import from Asia every year. Now the rice ecologists in Ghana are mainly what we call lowland rice. It's about 78% of rice production is done on what we call lowland rice. On the land form, we have these watersheds here, and these areas accumulate water during the rainy season, and that is where most of the rice is grown. We also have some production in irrigated rice production in some reservoirs up north, but it's only about 16% of the total production. Then we also have some upland rice production, because we now have a new rice variety we call Nerica in West Africa, which is mainly upland grown. So there are a lot of constraints, from social constraints, but my main focus here is the biophysical constraint, which is low soil fertility. And of the two big variables in low soil fertility is very low nitrogen content. The previous presenter was showing nitrogen contents of around 1%, and she was describing it as low. But we are talking here about nitrogen contents of about 0.05%, that's total N. And we have P content of about less than 5 milligrams per kilogram. So we are really talking about very poor soils, soils that are about 90% to 80 to 90% sand. But as the moderator questioned whether we grow on those soils, for most of these farmers, that's all that they have. That's the type of soil that they have, so they don't have a choice but to grow on them. So what did we intend to do? Said the problem of low inherent soil fertility in sub-Saharan Africa is compounded by a relatively high cost of fertilizers. Yes. But we have some natural resources that could be utilized. For instance, we have geological rock phosphate deposits throughout Africa. Some countries are actually exporters of rock phosphate. But the rock deposits located in the tropics and subtropics have very low peak quality because of low reactivity. So what we intended doing was to find out thermal techniques that we could use to solubilize rock phosphate. And we also realized that a lot of organic materials abound in the farmers' fields that could be used in charring techniques in conjunction with the rock phosphate to see whether this could solubilize the rock phosphate. So our objective was to develop a farmer applicable friendly technology for phosphate rock solubilization. Then we want a technology that will effectively utilize biomass. Then the technology these days in Africa, we say climate smart. We want the technology to be climate smart, and also the end product should significantly influence growth and yield of lowland rice. So we hypothesized that PR can be solubilized by thermal treatment, and rice husk charring will be an effective thermal treatment. And we also hypothesized that lowland rice growth and soil properties will respond positively to PRN-rich char rice husk. So this graph is showing how citric acid extractable phosphorus increases with increase in temperature as charring is done. But we realized that the extraction plateau somewhere around 300 degrees Celsius after about 4 hours, that's where you get the highest citric acid extractable P. Then in terms of water extractable P, we realized somehow strangely that even though the decrease is just very small, just about 0.6, but there's a slight decrease in water extractable P as you apply heat to phosphate rock. Now the charring system that we're talking about is a very simple system that farmers can easily produce. So it requires only about four materials. This is what we use. We call it, this is a Japanese word, kuntan for biochar, because we got this thing from Japan. The kuntan, this is a rice husk, a spade, and fire. So the process just involves setting up a fire, covering the fire with this kuntan, and heaping the rice husk that has been mixed with rock phosphate around the kuntan. Then within about 2 hours, you produce a biochar, which we think that is a process that farmers in Africa can easily adopt. So we monitor the temperature in the course of the biochar production, and we realize that it's highly irregular, it's highly unstable. But normally after about 2 hours, it stabilizes around 300 degrees Celsius. So after we have prepared our P-enriched biochar, we designed a simple experiment in a randomized complete block design on a 5 by 5 meter plot with 8 treatments and 4 replications. So these are some of the treatments. We have 0, that's no NPK, 0, no P. Then we have the phosphate rock enriched biochar at 50-50. That's a ratio of 1:1. Then we have one of 25% to 75%. Then the phosphate rock alone, rice husk, TSP, which is the standard P fertilizer that is recommended for farmers to use, then biochar. So these are some of the properties of the rock phosphate. This the pH. The total P content is about 297 milligrams per gram. Then we have, it's mainly a calcium phosphate, so we have a lot of high calcium content. And these are the properties of a rice husk and P-enriched rice husk. Once you add the rice husk to the phosphate rock and you char, you have about 129 when it's pure 100% rice husk alone. Then 25 to 75 proportion, you have 193, and the 50-50, you have about 203 grams per kilogram. So my results. In terms of plant height, we noticed that the rice husk enriched biochar at 50-50, and the TSP had almost about the same height at the time that we were at 6 weeks after planting, which was the last time we took that record. Then tillering is an important yield indicator in terms of rice production. We realized that strangely, where we mix raw rice husk and phosphate rock without charring, had the highest tillers. But when it came to the effective tillers, where we charred, we added rice husk, phosphate rock to rice husk and charred at 50-50, produced the most effective tillers. That's productive tillers. Then in terms of yield, we recorded the highest yield in the P-enriched rice husk biochar 50-50, which outperformed the traditional phosphorus fertilizer, which is triple superphosphate, which is used in these production systems. So after the experiment, we decided to look at some of the soil properties to see whether we can see any significant changes. Strangely, in terms of calcium, the unamended soils recorded the highest level of calcium content. But the most important thing that we observed was the BRAPI content of the biochar alone, treatment, which we did not amend. And we were thinking that maybe the release of P in the production process got delayed. So maybe biochar alone treatment release its P stores the latter stages of the experiment. Probably that has accounted for this. Yep. So my conclusions, application of P-enriched rice husk biochar 50-50 produced higher effective tiller count than the water-soluble phosphorus. The application of P-enriched rice husk biochar 50-50 produced the higher grain yield than the other treatment. Rice husk, which normally is bent. I mean, what happens in Africa is that after the harvesting, the straw, the husk, and all the residue that is generated on the farmers' fields just gets bent. So we thought that rice husk, which until recently was of no value, farmers could be educated to use this as an effective soil amendment in terms of rice production. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's a complex dynamics, and I think it depends on the quantities that you add in the long term and the availability of other soil nutrients like nitrogen, because then you don't want to offset the CN ratio in the field, then you get a lot of nitrogen becoming unavailable to plants, because nitrogen deficiency is number one before phosphorus. Yeah. So in the long term, yes, it should affect a lot of soil physical. There's a lot of data I didn't show here because of the 12-minute limit of time. I have data on how the pH changes. We monitor the soil moisture content. Even after we harvested, we continue monitoring the soil moisture content to see which of the fields was retaining more moisture. So if anybody's interested in some of this data, I can share it. Yeah. So, we saw some changes in some of these soil variables along the line. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone else? Yeah, on your biochar making machine, that was the first time I saw that. I'm kind of concerned about, do you guys produce pyrolysis oil, and what do you do with it when you do that?
You mean pyrolysis oil?
Yes. When you pyrolyze it, you usually produce oil.
No, but so far this system doesn't produce that. It doesn't produce any oil.
It doesn't produce any oil.
No. No, it's an open system. The gas just goes into the sky from the chimney there. Yes. The problem is maybe in my justification, there were some slides that I skipped over. I was trying to be time. One of the things that we wanted to avoid is that all the biochar production system that we have currently require that you do these things in laboratory settings. And the mandate of this research was to develop something that a farmer who is cropping like half a hectare of land and is producing rice can easily use. And this is this apparatus. It's manufactured by local blacksmith at around $10, $20. Yeah, but the questions you are asking relate to when you want to have a production system, a pyrolysis system, maybe under lab conditions. Unfortunately, this was not the target of this project, so we didn't do that. We did. We did, but we thought that the offsetting, I mean, these are things that is still under study. We want to measure that, but we thought that if we can produce, but instead of allowing the farmers to just burn the biochar, if we can produce biochar with this material, irrespective of the smoke, I think on the average, we'll end up storing more carbon in the soil than the smoke that is released into the atmosphere. This we've not measured it, but this is our thinking. Yeah.
Thank you.